Hello, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 271 of Her, where you're going to hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, what? Her feelings about race. Huh. All right. Oh, man. Yeah, you heard me right. And this has everything to do about your mind-body health. So listen, we've got a terrific show coming up. Before we begin, just know this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. Just run on over to smartypantsvitamins.com to learn more. Okie dokie, here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show because, honey, listen, we just love to hear from you. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Without much more ado, I just have to introduce you to one of the most extraordinary women I've ever had on my podcast or probably will ever meet. Her name is Jane Elliott. She's an American diversity educator. As a school teacher, she became known for her blue eyes, brown eyes exercise. She promotes the idea that there is only one race and race relations, which is namely the human race. She first conducted her famous exercise for her class on April 5th, 1968, the day after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. When her local newspaper published compositions that the children had written about the experience, the reactions formed the basis for her career as a public speaker against discrimination. Jane Elliott, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, you know something? First of all, I don't know what you have for breakfast, honey, but I want some of it. You've got more energy than I've ever seen. Okay, do you mind sharing your age?
Well, no, I'd love to have somebody split it with me. I'm 86.
86. Honey, listen, all I can say is I've seen you on television. I saw you on the Late Night Show. Just very recently because of all this stuff that's been going on in the news, you look fabulous. How do you take care of yourself? I mean, just aside from all this other stuff, I just want to launch into this for a second because the Her Podcast is all about taking good care of yourself, you know, for the long term so that you can live your life to the fullest. You look great. Have you always taken good care of yourself?
I started taking vitamins when I was right after I did the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise in 1968, and I haven't stopped. I take a handful of vitamins every morning, and I eat properly. I don't eat properly. I eat too many sweets, but when you're as vicious as I am, you have to have some sugar in your system, and I just am absolutely sold on vitamins. And I know that sounds like I'm being hired by your producer or endorser or whatever, but I just believe that none of us eat properly, and so you better have something to supplement your diet, and that's what I do, and it has worked beautifully.
Do you do exercise? I mean, do you walk a lot, or what?
I walk a lot. I walk a couple miles a day, but if I don't walk a lot, I just figure, well, I'll do more tomorrow. I don't exercise as often as I should.
Okay. Now, with all the stuff going on in the world right now, with all this race relations issues and all the rest of it, I happened upon this incredible article about you in the New York Times. And then, of course, you've been all over the news, multimedia. I'm so honored you're with us right now. This has turned out to be a phenomenal opportunity for everybody in the Her Podcast. And so, you know, I'd like you to tell me and all of our listeners what that famous exercise was in 1968, the day after Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. Tell us about the famous brown eyes, blue eyes experiment.
Well, number one, it's not an experiment because what I do is create a microcosm of society in a classroom or a boardroom or a lecture hall. And I treat blue-eyed white people for half an hour, hour and a half, however long they can take it, and they can't take it for very long, particularly if it's adults. I treat them the way we treat people of color, particularly black people in this country. And I don't reverse the exercise with adults. When I do it with children, I reverse it, and the next day a different group is on top. And what I learned when I put blue-eyed people, so-called intelligent adult blue-eyed people, in a situation in which they are being treated for an hour and a half, the way we treat black people in this country is they can't take it. They go absolutely crazy. It is fascinating to see how quickly they become everything we have accused them of being, and they begin to act exactly the way we have described minority group members of behaving. I wouldn't believe it if I hadn't seen it, and if I hadn't done it, I wouldn't believe it. But people need to look at the film The Eye of the Storm, or look at the film The Eye of the Storm, and read the book about it, which is called A Class Divided. And A Class Divided is a description of the reunion that those kids had that went through the film in The Eye of the Storm, that those kids had 5 years after they graduated from high school. They came back for a reunion, and we filmed their reaction after 5 years after high school to what they remember about that exercise for 2 days when they were in third grade. And those memories are absolutely searing. You can't watch those two films without thinking, my God, if this is what happens to white kids after a day, and they remember it for this long, how long will people of color remember the viciousness that we have exacted upon them for the last 300 years? How long will it take us to be forgiven for that, and how long will they forget it? I think they never will forget it. Luckily, they seem to be able to forgive it, but I don't know how.
Wow. So, you know, what we're looking at here then is you did a very simple exercise that you just, you know, cobbled together using your own creativity. And
No. I was born in 1933, the same year that Adolf Hitler and Franklin Roosevelt came to power. And from the year I was born until 1945, we were hearing about what Hitler was doing to Jews in Germany and then all over Europe. And I learned from that this is the way a dictator behaves. I've used that, and that's how I learned to do that exercise. One of the ways they decided who went into the gas chamber during what has become the Holocaust was eye color. So the day after Martin Luther King Jr. was killed, I decided I would do what Hitler did. I would separate my students according to the color of their eyes and discriminate against those who had the wrong color eyes. I didn't devise this. I didn't create this. I learned this from Adolf Hitler. And you need to know that today, I am seeing the blue-eyed, brown-eyed exercise being used in this country just as Hitler used it during the 30s and 40s. You need to realize that the person who is running this show right now bases his political philosophy on the writings of Adolf Hitler. We, you know, those who forget the mistakes of the past are doomed to repeat them. We are repeating the mistakes that we made and that we allowed to be made from 1933 to 1945.
So tell me, you know, you were in there was a retrospective that reunited the 1970 class members. Right? And this was done, Class Divided, an episode of the PBS series Frontline. So tell me what happened during that whole reunion.
Well, in the first place, they said, a couple of them drove many miles to get there. One stayed overnight in his car, came up from Missouri, stayed overnight in his car because he didn't want to miss it. And they sat down, and if I had scripted that, I couldn't have scripted it as well as what they said. They said they had never forgotten it. One person said, as long as I live, I'll have that collar in my pocket. One of them said, every time I hear a racist remark, I feel like I have that collar in my pocket, and I'd like to take it out and put it around their neck and say, now see how you think that you'd like to live that way for a week or two. Because on the day of the exercise, the people who are in the wrong, who have the wrong color eyes, have to wear a collar so that we can tell what color their eyes are without getting close to them. Those kids today, and they are over 50 years old, today remember what it was like to be in that position for one day. They've never forgotten it, and they've refused to tolerate racist remarks being made in their presence. It was just to hear those young adults and what they said about going through that exercise all those years later was absolutely the most amazing thing that has ever happened to me. Because
interesting.
What it says is those kids remember one day, then what do kids of color, what do black kids, how long do they remember the things that happen to them every day. And they happen every day. And it isn't just one teacher, one person in a controlled setting. And it isn't going to end when the class is over. It's going to go on for as long as white people will allow it to.
Do you see a lot of analogies as well to other forms of discrimination that have such health, you know, mental health, consequences, things like sexism and ageism as well?
What we forget and what we refuse to acknowledge is we base the way we treat those others who are different on the way we are allowed to treat blacks. If it's all right to do it to the people who are the color of the first modern human beings who evolved on this earth, then it's all right to do to those others who don't look or act or talk or walk or behave the way we do. We justify the way we treat others by the way we are allowed to treat blacks. Well, if it's all right to do it to them, must be all right to do it to you. And we know that it's all right to do it for blacks because we've been doing it in this country for 300 years.
Well, so let me just go back to sexism and ageism again. So if someone is working hard and they're 57 years old and the company now wants to basically pay for a cheaper, younger people move the older people out, how do you feel about ageism?
I feel like if you have contributed to racism for 57 years of your life, you'd better expect to be treated. You'd better expect that people think that you behave the way you want to be treated. We believe in the golden rule in this country. And people say, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. If you have done unto blacks all your life, then you must expect them to do unto you when you get old. We cannot deny that we are indoctrinated in how to treat those who are different from the day we are born. That is part of our upbringing. Here is how you treat those who are different, and here are the differences that we are not going to tolerate. We may put up with them, which is why we use the word tolerate, but we will not recognize, appreciate, and value them, which is the dictionary meaning for tolerance. No, we put up with the old, and we learn that from birth. We learn to put up with those who are different, but we do not learn to appreciate, recognize, and value them.
I think that a lot of the upsurge that has been taking place really globally is also a wake-up call to how we treat people in general. And that's why I bring up sexism and ageism as well, because this has been, it's interesting. We're now, right now, at the 100th anniversary of the suffrage and the suffragettes who really went out there and worked hard for so long to be able to get women and the vote. And if you actually look back in history, they had to work at this for quite some time because although the Constitution in the United States says, equal rights for everyone, and then women don't have a vote, there you have it. Now, clearly that spilled off, into race as well. But I'm looking at a number of analogies here and in a reawakening of our being cognizant and aware of how we treat people and differences, whether it's age or gender or race, and back and forth, economic status, for instance. I think it's sort
of all of those things.
Yeah.
All of those things depend on how we are educated where race is concerned. Black males don't get to be 57 years old for the most part. They're lucky if they get to be 21. Black females are my heroes because they keep on keeping on no matter what we do to them, and I don't know how they do it. They develop coping skills that I've never had to develop. And when people say, well, racism is kind of like sexism and ageism, I'm sorry, but you don't choose your sex and you don't choose your age. But you do choose racism. That is a choice you make. You don't choose the color of your skin, but you do choose how you react to skin color. And how you react to skin color is going to dictate how you will react to age and to gender. And we do it all the time. So until we solve the problem of racism, we're not going to solve any of these other isms. The ignorance of racism is the number one, absolutely most harmful ism on the face of the earth as it exists today. The President's Joint Council on Mental Health in Children in 1959 identified racism as the number one mental health problem among children in this country. And they didn't say among black children. They said among all children, because if you base your self-image on something as like the amount of a chemical in your skin, which is melanin, you are being educated in an unreal manner. You are being taught a lie. And everybody has to read the book, The Myth of Race, by Robert Wald Sussman, and realize how dreadfully misled we have been. I didn't say misled. I said misled. A myth is something we make up to explain a natural phenomenon that we don't understand. A lie, on the other hand, is something that we make up to justify something ugly that we've been doing. Racism and racist behaviors are something ugly that we've been doing, and we use that as the pattern for how we treat all those others who are different. When you get old, you're going to be on the receiving end of ageism. And at that point, you're going to say, oh my God, now they're doing it to me. I didn't know. And it'll be too late for you to put a stop to it. So we have to stop it now. But you can't
just interesting.
Talk about interconnectedness. You can't do that. You have to talk about the main problem first. And that's racism. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that, I would just simply say that I think it's very important to look at all of this very holistically and realize that from culture to culture, country to country, all across the globe, that many cultures have been struggling with this whole issue of discrimination per se, which obviously then spills off into disparities at multiple levels. I think maybe we're just, because of this COVID crisis and because of what goes on now where we have a moment and an opportunity to hit a pause button to really, examine a lot of these issues. I want everyone out there to know that we're talking with Jane Elliott. She is an American diversity educator. And, one of the things that's extremely important for us to keep in mind is that as we deal with people on a day-by-day basis, we have to understand that our own perspectives and beliefs affect other people both mentally and physically, meaning that, people who walk around feeling as though they are disenfranchised, feeling as though they're discriminated against, have profound mental and physical consequences. And I think that, as a physician myself, I've clearly encountered this type of thing as I work with people. And I think, again, Jane is one of those very important voices out there to help us really humble us to what the work that we have to be able to start turning this thing around one way or the other. And you've been at it for quite some time. Please go to her website, Jane Elliott, and that's spelled with an ELLIOTT.com. And then also please go to the New York Times article on Jane Elliott, which was on July the 15th of this year, 2020, so that you can read the entire comprehensive story about the work that Jane has done. Jane, I cannot begin to thank you enough for being on the Her podcast to really be a voice out there. At the age of 86, you're just not letting it go. I find it interesting that you're 86 and that this whole thing started in exactly the turnaround of those numbers in 68. 1968, and you're 86. Yeah, I know. I was looking at this on my, yeah, isn't that interesting? So, Jane, I cannot thank you enough for being on the Her podcast and shedding further light on what is a ridiculously challenging issue and really just looking at discrimination per se. Jane, thank you so much for being on the Her podcast.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
And everyone out there, take a minute to hit iTunes and rate and review the show. Just know that we're waiting to hear from you, and especially me, because I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Her podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks so much for listening today. Stay safe and stay well.